Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feeds it right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
Hey, what's up, Kings fans, and welcome to episode 32 of the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the unofficial podcast of RinkRoyalty.com. I'm Scott Kinville, and before we get going, we just want to let you know that you can find us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at RinkRoyalty and also at Royalty_pod, and you can find us on Facebook at the Hockey Royalty Podcast. So we got a great show lined up for everybody today. Before we get going, I want to bring in our panel. First up, as always, our fearless leader, the man who leads us into that journalism battle every week, the one and the only, Mr. Ryan Sykes. What's happening, Ryan?
Hey, Scott. Doing well tonight. How are you?
I'm doing good, my friend. Doing good. Watching some good playoff hockey going on. We got an exciting Ontario rain coming up a little bit later on here. So
yeah, 9:30 start time, 10:30 for you. So make your coffee.
It's already made. And also joining us, as he usually does, coming to us from the sunny sunshine of Southern California, the man who puts the shake in Shake and Bake, it's Mr. Russell Morgan. What's going on, Russ?
Dude, Scott, you're killing me, bro. I love it. I feel like the Rock walking down the runway right now.
Hey, can you raise one eyebrow?
No. As many times as I tried. I could probably do a good people's elbow, though.
Hey, there you go. Just not on me. Oh, all right. Well, without further ado, I want to bring in our guest. Our guest this week knows pretty much everything there is to know about prospects and the drafts that are coming through. He runs the draftanalyst.com, and he also has a podcast called The Draft Analyst as well. So as you can tell, we're going to be calling him The Draft Analyst. It is Mr. Steve Corianos. What's going on, Steve? Thanks for coming on.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
We really appreciate it, too. So tell us, how did you get started with The Draft Analyst?
Oh, man. I started watching the draft when I was a kid, but it was all like the Canadian feed. So I'm like 8 years old and I'm watching all these, Canadian guys talking about the draft. And I was amazed at how, you know, they had the different setup than the NFL and the NBA draft. You know, they have all the scouts on the floor, and there's this big entourage that goes up to the stage to make the pick, and sometimes they have their kids with them. And so I thought it was interesting, and, you know, I always wanted to be a sports writer, so, you know, before I had a career in the military for about 13 years, but before that I was in, you know, journalism, worked for ESPN, worked for the AP, and I was always into prospects, and so something that I was always into, and when I realized that I wasn't going to make the Army career anymore, I decided to transition. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? And I did baseball a little bit, but Baseball America seems to have the monopoly on that information. So I said, you know what, there's kind of a little bit of a void. Most of the publications that we get as draft fans in hockey come out of Canada. There wasn't really like an American-based prospect, I guess, forum or platform. And really, that's just how it started. Little by little, I started just tweeting random stuff out, started going to some AHL games. And then really 2015 was the first year I did it, opened up the blog, and the rest is history.
You know, it's funny because I was going to ask you that about when you started watching the prospects as a kid, just because, so you know, I am old enough to remember watching the NFL draft on ESPN when they were actually using handheld, you know, signage and all that back when Pete Rozelle had the phone.
Rozelle, yeah.
So you're based out of the New York City area, correct?
Well, I'm from New York City. I live in Nashville now. I left New York. Yeah, I left New York in 2017, living in the city. And now I'm in, like, the Nashville area. So, you know, it's growing hockey market. I mean, they went pretty crazy over the Preds a couple of years ago. Now they've just accepted that they're a mediocre team. yeah, and I'm kind of – it's not optimal for seeing this, the kids, though, because when I lived in New York, I got to go to Canada, and it was a lot closer. Now – you know, I just went to Dallas. They're like, oh, it's close. It's only 9 hours away. You know, it used to be the other way around. So everything was really close by. But, yeah, I love it here, though. Nice place to live.
So you kind of touched on the Predators. And I just kind of want to get your overall thoughts on the playoffs thus far. We're two games into a lot of the games. You know, you got a really good series in Tampa, Florida Panthers. Just what are your thoughts overall?
Well, there's two things. One thing's surprising and one thing's not surprising. The one thing that's not surprising is the intensity and the hitting. We all knew that because of the restructuring of the divisions, when you play the same team 8 or 9 times in the regular season, in a shortened regular season, then it's going to just add all that much more intensity to the if they meet up in the playoffs. The one thing that's surprising are the shot totals, that like the up and down. I don't know if you're a conspiracy theorist and you're like, the league is telling – the teams, hey, open it up a little bit more. You know, we kind of need the excitement. You know, both out in the Penguins games, you can have 40 shots plus, 40 plus shots. The same with the Bruins Caps. Bruins are one of the better defensive teams in the league. And, you know, that game was 40 and 40 shots each. So I like it, though. I like it. I remember the dead puck era and the 1-0 games with 15 shots apiece. But this is great. The only thing that we really don't have is that like elite stopper goalie. You know, it just seems like all the goaltenders in this, maybe Fleury if you want to count him as one, but yeah, I remember I go back to 8 years ago when they used to do the beach ball gifs of Fleury because he was letting everything against the Flyers. But you don't really have that one goalie that you could say, you know, that guy is going to, you know, he's a star. There's no Hasek, there's no Jonathan Quick, there's no Brodeur or Wah, or even like, Carey Price will be in it. We'll see how he does, but. So maybe that's the reason why you're having all these up and down affairs and high scoring games, but very exciting, very exciting.
Well, we've yet to see Jack Campbell though. That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
They love him in Toronto. They love him. They're obsessed with him. I get it, but I'm going to watch that series though.
that'll be fun.
You mentioned it too in the shot total stuff. Colorado had 50 shots last night against St. Louis to, the Blues 23 shots. I guess, Steve, give us one series you think could go all 7 games and one series that could be a clean sweep.
I think the Blues might find it in them to steal one game, but they looked pretty beaten down last year when they lost to Vancouver, and this is a pretty humbling, like, well, the other game was pretty humbling, like to get beat down like that. They didn't have a good season. So I think that's going to be the shortest series. But I think Islanders Penguins is going to go seven or close to it at least. I think Boston Washington will. Even the Winnipeg Edmonton one is a very underrated series because you got Hellebuck, one of the best goalies in the league, against McDavid and Draisaitl, the best one to scoring punch in the league. But out of all the series, and I know Florida and Tampa's up there as well, but the Minnesota-Vegas series is what I'm really into because Vegas has all this pressure on them to do something, right? They haven't done anything since going to the Cup. I mean, last year they went to the conference finals and got humbled. But Minnesota, if you watched the games this year, Minnesota handled them. And Vegas frustrated by the Wild. And I think the Wild being a hockey hotbed in Minnesota, they've been dying for a team to get past the second round. I think it was, what, 2003 with Gabrick? Was it Rollison? Right. Was it the team? I forgot who was on that team. That's the series I think that you're going to get a lot of back and forth, a lot of pushback. And I don't think Minnesota is going to pull out game two because I think Vegas is really going to give their best effort. But that's the series I'm really looking forward to. I want to see a lot of game sevens. That's basically how I'm looking at it. And I think we'll see probably – maybe three or four at least.
Yeah, I mean, last year we were so fortunate with, I believe, what, the Western Conference Finals going seven, or maybe it's the semifinals. But then also the Islanders took it to seven as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I'm just hoping that we can get that kind of quality as well from the 2021 version. Yeah. Kind of transitioning to the LA Kings now. We got some help from the Vancouver Canucks. I read one of your recent articles, the Kings are currently slated to are in the eighth spot for the lottery, 6% chance for the top pick. If you had to pick today, who's the guy that you would take? Let's just say they end up with number eight, and then let's also say they end up with number one. Who would you take in those scenarios?
Well, number one, I'll just get the number one out of the way because for me, it's either one or two players, and my next ranking is going to come out soon. Very difficult draft year to assess. It's not like any other one I've done before. Every year has always had a consensus number one, except for 2017. But even in 2017, we knew there was some separation outside of like the top four or five. With this one in particular, though, we really don't know. Like you have guys that might be ranked 15 in one ranking and two or one in another one. So, but my top two are going to be the two kids out of Michigan, Matt Beniers, the center, and Owen Power, the defenseman. Power is going to be playing for Canada at the upcoming World Championships. Beniers is going to be playing for Team USA at the same tournament. Beniers was a big part of Team USA winning the gold at the World Junior Tournament, and he had a fantastic freshman year, just like Power. So those are my top two. If I'm going to create separation, I'm going to make those two guys my top two, either or, really, because they're both fantastic prospects. And then you could kind of go thereafter. As far as the eighth pick, I mean, kind of goes back to what I said, how, I mean, it really all depends on what the Kings are looking for. We all know that they're loaded at center, right? They have at least, I would say, seven or eight prospects that I would call blue chippers, and some of them are even playing wing, because there's just no room for them. You got this massive competition between these kids or who's going to crack the lineup. So I think, you know, if a center comes up, let's say a guy like Beniers, do they take him and say, well, he's the best player available. He's number one on our board. We got to take him and just see where it goes. And maybe the Kings will do that. Maybe they say, you know, hey, we're going to turn you to wing now because we just have too many centers. But there are a lot of guys. If they go defense, I think maybe the Kings could use – like another playmaker on defense. And in that case, maybe one of the two guys from North America, one being Luke Hughes, who's Quinn Hughes' brother. He's a lefty. And then you got the righty, the Canadian kid, Brant Clark, who played for the OHL, but ended up going to Slovakia when they shut that season down. So, you know, I would lean towards wing or defense. The goalie, there are a couple of goalies that some are saying might be top 10, top 15 this year, Kosa, the kid out of the WHL, and then the Swedish kid Wallstedt that a lot of people know about. But the Kings are kind of not, I don't want to say loaded, but they have a lot of goalie prospects, and I don't know if they're willing to spend the first round pick on a goaltender. So I'm thinking it's going to be either a wing or a defenseman. You know, we'll see how it goes.
Do you think with this kind of draft, let's see, any team really, do you see a team drafting now more for a position of need as opposed to just drafting who they think is the best overall player, number one?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think so. I think that they're going to look at their prospect depth charts and they're going to say, you know, and they're going to look at the skill sets of all their main players. And again, when you're drafting in the top 10 or 15, maybe even for the entire first round, you want a difference maker and the guy or the kid that's going to take the shortest amount of time to become that difference maker. So, you know, some teams we've seen them say, oh, we'll just, you know, get this college kid. He'll be in college for 3-4 years. We don't have to worry about him. Well, if you're picking in the top 10 or 15, you can't really do that. You know, you want kids with the immediate impact, because if you're a losing team, chances are that the GM and the scouting director and the coaches will have their jobs on the line. So they want the help to come in as soon as possible. So, yeah, I could just see, you know, this particular draft is defense heavy. Not really in the top five, but – and I wouldn't even say it's going to be like 2012 where you had like, what, 8 of the first 12 picks with defensemen. But this is more heavy on defensemen than it is at center ice. And so considering that the Kings, that's a position of strength for them, both at the NHL level and also at the prospect level, that maybe it would be, and not just the Kings, a lot of teams for that matter, are just going to look at their strengths within the organization and say, all right, you know, with this draft, you know, we don't really know. Everything's all over the place. Let's just go for need. And that's really it, because it's crazy. I'm telling you, it's crazy. You talk to people in the industry and they're telling you that their draft boards look like incredibly different from everyone else's and vice versa. So,
yeah, Steve, totally. I mean, I've seen 4 or 5 different rankings with 4 or 5 different number one overalls. Yeah. It's pretty wild, this draft, and it should be pretty fun to watch. But like you mentioned, this draft is really top heavy in terms of defensemen, but a lot of the defensemen besides Hughes are right shot D-men. And with the Kings, they're pretty loaded in terms of right shot D-men, even on right now on the roster, and even prospect wise with Brock Faber still up to come. Helga Granz is still a really good dynamic offensive player, and he's a right shot D-man. So, I mean, for me personally, I don't see the Kings taking on Hughes. They're looking for more of like a player who's going to probably make an impact sooner rather than later. I've always seen the forward Kent Johnson as one of the more NHL-ready players. But who do you think would be more NHL-ready in the top 10?
Well, first thing is we need to adjust the term NHL-ready, because I used to always think that NHL-ready was like they come in and, they, you know, there's only 3 or 4 guys per draft year where they come in right away. But now we're seeing whether it's cap-related, and it probably is going to, because of COVID and all the losses in revenue, that teams are going to want to get cheaper. So now you're seeing all these kids that were drafted recently, not top 5 picks as well, like kids that were drafted top 10. Cole Caulfield, top 15 pick. He played in, you know, for 10 games for the Canadiens after only 2 years at Wisconsin. That's something that we never really used to see before. So I think that technically we have to adjust that, like, you know, way of thinking and saying that really all these kids are NHL ready. Because the money factor, and if you want to say that size isn't a big deal anymore, it used to be physical maturity, right? That physical maturity was a big deal. Well, it's really not, because you got guys like Alex DeBrincat and Cole Caulfield and, you know, Sam Girard, guys that are under 5'10", coming in and becoming impact players rather quickly. So, but I like the kid Eklund out of Sweden. He's a left wing. He can play right wing. He's not a big guy. He's about 5'11", 175. But he set or came close to setting all types of U18 scoring records in the SHL for U Gardens. He played on Alexander Holtz's line. So you got Holtz on one wing, the right wing, you know, Holtz being a top 10 pick last year for the Devils, and Eklund on the left side. And I'm going to be honest with you, I've seen the kid play a ton. He outplayed Holtz, I would say, like 85-90% of the time. And drives possession, and he's flashy, and he's tough. He's a little kind of pesky too. So I think, I mean, he got hurt recently, so he's not going to be playing at the upcoming Worlds. But you know, Matt Beniers, physically ready, mature. Owen Power, physically ready, mature. You know, Carson Lambos, physically mature. He probably might be ready. And the other thing is, a lot of these draft picks this year, because of COVID, they had to go to the European Adult Leagues. Mason McTavish, who's a kid, Brennan Hoffman, Francisco Pinelli, they all were OHL kids that had nowhere to play. So they ended up going to Europe, and they played in places like Austria and Slovakia and Slovenia. And I think that experience is going to kind of help them, because there's a huge, huge difference in the physicality, the level of play. from a junior league to an adult age elite league in Europe.
Steve, let me ask you, do you think that could maybe become a thing for the future where some of these younger, like 18-year-olds start going to Europe instead of going to the junior simply because of the rule saying that, you know, under 20, you can either go to the NHL or the juniors. You can't play in the AHL. So is it maybe would behoove them to go to Europe to get some professional experience, and they're not beholden to an OHL or a WHL or a Q team?
Here's the problem. The Canadian Hockey League, which is basically the governing body of the three major junior leagues in Canada, which has always been the main developer of talent for the NHL, you know, for years, it was always about 80-85% came out of those three leagues. They're an institution in Canada. Like they are, I mean, I don't think we have anything really comparable here in the United States where you have an amateur league, a junior league, where, you know, they have, you know, the whole country shuts down to watch the Memorial Cup and it's nationally televised. So the Canadian Hockey League has been losing a lot of money the last few years. They're not getting the American kids anymore. The American kids are going to the USHL and they're going to college. And on top of that, now they're not getting the European imports because the European imports are either going to college or the USHL. So the CHL has to find a way to maintain its relevance in the country. And that's why they have this rule where you're not allowed to play in the AHL, the American Hockey League, until they're, you know, 19 or 20 years old. But I think to answer your question, I think that's going to have to get reevaluated because, you know, the bottom line is developing players to play in the NHL, not filling stands or filling an arena in North Bay or, you know, Kelowna. It's to get kids to the NHL and make them the best pros possible and give them a great career, a great life. And listen, I'm going to be honest with you. If someone told me when I was 17, 18, hey, you're going to go to Northern Italy or you're going to go to Switzerland and you're going to live there and get paid and also play hockey, a game that you love. I mean, I'm not turning that down. I like to travel. So maybe, you know, they can think differently, but it's a great question and we'll have to wait and see. But I really think that the CHL, the NHL, they're all going to get together and try to find middle ground where you're not, you know, punishing the kids, but you're also, you know, maintaining the integrity and the success of the CHL.
Yeah, to your point, Steve, I mean, you look at a guy like Arthur Kaliev, who Rob Blake today said in his exit interview that he admitted that the team had originally planned for him to play in the OHL this season, but obviously with the COVID stuff, he played for the Rain this year and led the team in scoring. So, yeah. I mean, personally, on a personal level, I'd like to see them reevaluate that age restriction. It was more exciting to, admittedly, it was more exciting to watch the Rain at times this year than the Kings. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. No, I agree. So, I mean, it was ridiculous how many kids they had down there and play the kids that were playing well, too.
Yeah, I mean, even like Quentin Byfield. I mean, if you look at him, this is my personal opinion. I know there's some differing opinions out there, but if they had to send him back, I personally think that sending Quentin Byfield back to junior this season would have done nothing for his development. You know, he really that year of AHL really helped him. And if they had to make the choice, I would have said he'd been better off playing in the NHL, just be playing against a better competition and being around the coaching staff rather than, you know, going down and obviously playing lesser competition to what he is right now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, basically you got like two different schools of thought, right? You got one school of thought that says, you know, the quicker we get these kids to the tougher leagues, that the faster that they'll develop. And then the other side of that is if you rush them, then you run the risk of ruining them. They get intimidated. They, you know, they press, they try to do too much if they get, you know, but I think that, you know, again, it's just if you want to blame it on COVID or it's just everything's going to have to be reevaluated now because, you've had kids go straight from the CHL right into the NHL and be dominant. Sidney Crosby, Patrick Kane, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like there's a rule that says, well, if they play against men, they're going to develop into a better player. No, I mean, Stamkos didn't play against men. Tavares didn't play against men. They went right into the NHL and they were fine. But at the same time, you know, it's all about what the kids want. And remember, you also have pressure from the agents as well, because the agents want to get paid.
Right.
And the agents, realize that, that entry-level contract and all the bonuses kick in once they get to the actual NHL. And so that's why you're seeing a lot of these kids leave college early. So, you know, a lot of stuff to talk about for the powers that be in the coming years.
So just kind of transitioning into, there are five players that we kind of wanted to discuss with you in the upcoming draft. Just kind of doing like a full scouting report and breakdown. The first one being Brant Clark, the right-handed defenseman. He was one of those players that played overseas in Slovakia. I was just wondering if you could kind of give us maybe, let's say, strengths, weaknesses, and your pro comparison for him.
Well, he's a playmaker. He's got good size. He's very mobile, highly intelligent. So he's about 6'1", 175. Like, he reminds me a lot of Scott Niedermeyer, but not with the, like, Niedermeyer was very graceful and a fluid skater, whereas Clark is a very awkward skater. But he's almost like he's like Knock-Kneed or Knee-Knock, Knock-Kneed, where it's like, you know, he's got a really wide base. And it's almost like he's skating on his edges, moving forward. So, but he's so like fancy and dynamic and, creative with the puck. And, I just got a chance to see him up close and personal in Texas for that tournament. And he was one of the best players there. So what you're looking at is a potential number one defenseman. He's very enthusiastic. He's got a great head on his shoulders. And he's very smart. So he can make everybody around him better, that cliche. Type of defenseman, not overly physical, but competitive. And again, I don't know if any like aesthetic issues with his skating is going to hurt him moving forward. But I mean, he could go end to end and coast to coast, just not like in a roadrunner kind of a way. But that's the kind of player that he is.
And I guess transitioning then to our second player and Owen Power. I know Russell had this question, just kind of our conversations that we've had, but do you kind of see him developing into more of an offensive defenseman as his game grows?
Yeah, like I know, I mean, I'm dating myself now, but he's a throwback. And, you know, there was a period in the 1980s, really, when I first started watching hockey, where it was really like the first major era of the defenseman. Yeah, we got Brad Park and Bobby Orr and, in the 70s. But you know, it seemed like every team had an aggressive puck moving defenseman. And he's kind of a cross between Larry Murphy, a former Kings draft pick that they traded, and Kevin Hatcher, the big defenseman that used to play for the Capitals, where he's this big guy. He's not the thing about both Larry Murphy and Kevin Hatcher is that they weren't overly physical. And Power's 6'5", 6'6", 217 or 220. He's not like a linebacker on skates. He's not a guy that like mashes people and like, you know, but he has the hands and the footwork and the creativity of a forward. Mm-hmm. So like the way that Larry Murphy was, or like the way, in a way, a little bit the way like a Drew Doughty. But I think Doughty has that that attitude, you know, Power is very reserved on the ice, but you can't take him for granted or take him lightly because, you know, he'll use his stick. But he's the kind of guy that you put on the ice, he'll log 25 minutes a game. His pass deliveries, 99 out of every 100 will be right on the tape, and he does not get rattled under pressure. I think that's what a lot of teams look for in their defensemen. They don't want guys that are just going to be willing to throw the puck away at the first sign of forecheck pressure. And a lot of defensemen in this draft class, the top ones, don't do that. They're very poised. And they have a high panic threshold.
Something that really stood out to me about Owen Power's game is his ability to quarterback the power play. And you noted it too, but his stick handling skills, especially in close quarters. Yeah. And he's such a big guy, and you see his hands just kind of moving so nifty and stuff. It's just kind of a rare skill set.
Yeah, and one thing to consider is that Michigan team had like 8 zillion top prospects from them, and they all want the puck. They all want to, impress the teams that drafted them or impress the other draft, the scouting directors. And it's not easy for a defenseman to be in that role because, you know, you got Brendan Brisson with the one-timer, Thomas Bortolo with the wrist shot, and, Beniers and Johnson. I mean, it was a star-studded group of college hockey players. And he found a way to manage all of them into the attack and kind of like facilitate their strengths. So I like what I saw from him. Really had a good year this year.
Yeah, and we could get into a whole nother podcast about wanting to see Michigan in the NCAA tournament. But
yeah,
transitioning to kind of the last defenseman that I wanted to hone in on was Simone Edvinson. I saw in one of your recent articles that you compared him to Victor Hedman. Every time I watch him, it's hard for me to get a grasp of what type of player he's going to be. I guess, can you just kind of shed some light on that?
He's a big, mobile, confident young man. He's got great hands. He's an automatic breakout. He plays with a lot of fire, but it's more like internal fire where you just know he's really upset that they're targeting him or that his team needs a boost and he wants to take control over a game. The problem with Edvinson is that sometimes it gets him into trouble. So he played in all three senior leagues this year. Now, as far as the comparison to Victor Hedman goes, I just want to make it clear that it's because he's Swedish and he's big and he could skate. Remember, Victor Hedman took like 5 or 6 years to become the Victor Hedman that we know today. They were a little worried about him in Tampa for the first couple of years. So in that regard, I think that Edvinson, to reach his ultimate maximum peak, which is a number one defenseman on a really good team or a contending team, it's going to take 4 or 5 years. He just wants to do everything himself, and not in a selfish me kind of a way. It's just that he hangs on to the puck for a long time, and he's got to learn when to let it go. He also has to learn when to step back and switch over to defense, because I can't tell you how many times I watched him and his poor forwards are like, all right, here we go. He's below the goal line again. I got to go cover for him at the point. And he gets victimized a lot for odd man rushes. So some people want to say that he's a really good defenseman defensively, one-on-one, absolutely. But it's the knowledge and the anticipation of positional playing his own end that has me concerned. So I'd say he's more of a top 15 to 20 pick than he is a top 1 to 10 pick, like some people have him ranked. But, to each his own. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he reaches his potential, becomes that really good NHL defenseman.
Kind of switching to the forwards now. One prospect that really intrigues me, and I love watching his game, I was telling Scott and Russ the other day, is Cole Sillinger.
Yeah.
Big, heavy shot, 6 foot, 200 pounds, left-handed. But I guess the things that I've kind of read on him are he just doesn't have the greatest quickness. But, when I watch him on film, I see him darting through the slot, and he has a lot of goal scorers goals. Just kind of looking for more insight on Cole Sillinger and if that quickness thing holds any water.
He's the one that started getting me a little upset with some of the reports out there. I'm usually okay if people want to have their opinions. It's not good if everyone lives in an echo chamber. We all agree on the same thing. But same thing. I watched Sillinger play last year in the WHL. Watched him play a ton this year in the USHL. And okay, so if his stride isn't perfect, I mean, look at all the top players. Look at what did you guys watch the Vegas-Minnesota game the other day where Mark Stone, arguably one of the slowest forwards in the NHL, went coast-to-coast and just completely dangled like 2 or 3 Minnesota players. And I'm like – and I even tweeted about it. I'm like, oh, look what slow Mark Stone just did. So it's like the skating thing has become so overrated. You got – now people are talking about hip flexion and crossovers and who cares? Who cares about that stuff? I mean, that we all know that the majority of the game is played in one end. Okay, you could say about the neutral, but it's in it goes, out it goes, fine. But to really be successful, you have to execute plays in the offensive zone, and it doesn't matter how fast you are in that regard. As long as you really keep your feet moving and you're executing your set plays and your cycles. So Sillinger is just a fantastic playmaker. He's got great vision. Just always keeps his feet moving, and he's mean. He's got a great shot. He can score in a whole bunch of ways, and he's got the NHL bloodlines. His dad, Mike, was the journeyman, but always a very important and versatile player for any team that he played on. And I think that's the kind of player that Cole is. He's a versatile, multifaceted. He can play center. He can play wing. He's a high-volume shooter. Could be a pass-first guy. I mean, he's been in my top 10 most of the season, and I'm not moving. Wow. He didn't play at the last the tournament, and it's a shame because he didn't play, it gave the chance for other guys to get more get noticed more, and I think because of that you might see some recency bias in rankings, but he's a top 10 pick for me. I love him.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to gauge his quickness on a highlight film because it's exactly that, a highlight film. But just the last guy we kind of wanted to talk about, and you've already mentioned his name, was Mason McTavish. I keep checking out mock drafts, and he keeps shooting up draft boards. One of those guys that was without a place to play this past season went over to the Swiss League and then captained the U18s for Team Canada. Shed some light on him. And I guess, where do you think he goes in this draft?
Yeah, I agree. Anyone that wants to shoot him up in their rankings and mock drafts, be my guest. I mean, he was always in like the 15 to 20 range for me. But again, I got a chance to see him up close and personal at the U18s. And although I'm against using a short tournament to you know, pick one guy over another, I mean, he was such a difference maker on the penalty kill, the physical play. He was blowing people up. Like in all three zones, he was hitting people in the offensive end. He was hitting people in the neutral zone. He was hitting people in the defensive end. You know, I initially assessed him as a shoot first winger, right? Because Washington played for Peterborough. That's what I thought of him as, like a shoot first left wing goal scoring type. But then I realized, like, no, this kid's a playmaker. And if you go back and you watch the film from the games in the Swiss League, that he didn't care that he was playing against men. He didn't care that he was 17 playing against 25, 30-year-old guys. He was blowing them up too. And just a mean, abrasive, angry kid with a lot of skill. So, you know, no issues with his skating. You know, if you want to focus on discipline and getting it, I mean, who cares really at this point? I mean, really, he's a kid that I wouldn't even be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's top three on some draft boards after the way he played in that tournament. He is a – I don't want to say he's a special player, but, you know – he made me come out of my seat, and a lot of it didn't have to do with puck skills. A lot of these young kids could do fancy things with the puck, but he plays a complete game. He really is a complete player.
Just to kind of almost follow up on that, do you think he's the fastest or highest riser in the draft coming up, or do you see another player taking over that spot?
Well, we have to wait and see how Power and Benias play at the men's world championships, because they're playing against men. So, you know, I could see a guy, but yeah, I would say that, you know, Svechkov, the Russian kid too, another kid that I've been high on. A lot of people got a chance to see him for the first time in that tournament, and he was fantastic there as well. You know, the Tuomala, another one is going to be a riser, the winger from Finland. And again, the thing that's similar about all these guys, well, not really as much Svechkov, but Tuomala, you look at his listings, 5'11", 175. He hits. He is always in motion. He's fast. He's got that lethal one-timer, and he's always aggressive on the forecheck, and he's willing to deliver a pretty hard body check. So I think, I mean, for all the scouts in attendance, you have to ask the question, do those kids play like that because the scouts were there, or do they always play like that? And if you watch them play during the season, the answer is yes, they've always played like that. They've always been physical.
And Steve, kind of before I pass it off to Scott and, you know, stop hogging the mic, I just want to get your thoughts on Zachary Leroux. He had, what, like four suspensions this year? He's some disciplinary issues. I showed the guys here earlier today his fight. I believe it was on April 21st, where one of the opposing guys was he slashed his goaltender, and he kind of had enough of it. Do you see his disciplinary issues right now being a problem carrying over to the next level?
No, absolutely not. The disciplinary issues are off the ice. Is that what you got to worry? Now that he has that, I'm just saying, like, so when it comes to discipline, what you do off the ice will be a red flag. But what you do on the ice, being dirty, I mean, look at what Tom Wilson's doing. You know, like, Tom Wilson is hated by everybody, every fan base, but guarantee you every GM in the league would love to have him on the team. So I don't think it'll be a deal breaker. It'll be a red flag or whatever you want to call it, because he's a skilled guy. Now I have you know some reservations about him as far as, like, you know, decision making and some other things like that. But as far as, like, is he worthy of being a first round pick? Absolutely, he deserves it. He's got a pretty strong draft resume. It's a shame that we didn't see any Quebec League kids at the U18 tournament, because, you know, a lot of big names were missing. Because they have playing in the postseason right now, and they might have opened up some eyes. So I like Leroux a lot. I really do. There's a couple of good kids that are coming out of the Quebec League that aren't really getting talked about much because they really haven't had the spotlight shine on them yet.
Yeah, I mean, and actually, you know, Ryan's really quite shy until you put a microphone in front of him. And then I can.
My disciplinary issues are a problem.
Steve, is there anybody who's kind of over it? Well – Steve, is there anybody who's overrated in this first round?
There's a couple of guys, and you know, I know that they're kids, but I gotta channel my inner Mel Kiper and just you know, not mince words. Fabian Liesel is incredibly fast. He's a winger that plays out of Sweden, and he, when I watched him play for the men's league team, he got traded from Frölunda to Luleå, and I think the issue was playing time related, and there might be some other stuff going on there too. But as a fourth liner for this competitive team that he got traded to, he was actually a hard worker. But at the U18s, he was puck hogging. In the Swedish J20 junior league, he's a puck hog. And so I'm wondering, when he's not blowing by everybody with his elite speed, what else can he do? And the thing is, he can contribute off the puck. I'm just saying, it's like, you know, maybe, you know, some people talking about maybe potential top three or five pick. I wouldn't do that. I think that he's a little rough around the edges and his game needs refinement. I would say Edvinson is a little overrated, but more by the NHL scouting community, because they're the ones that apparently have been polled and said, oh, he could be a first overall pick, where the people that cover the draft and follow these kids from year round, not to diss the NHL scouting community, but if you want to say that we're really not influenced by anything but what we see with our eyes, I think that Edvinson is more of in that 10 to 15 range than the 1 to 5 range. And then the two American kids who I used to be really high on, one being Chaz Lucius, the other one being Sasha Pastrzyk. Lucius has an excuse because he had a knee injury, but Pastrzyk is a pretty one-dimensional player. And I had him in my top five for a long time. And then when I watched him play, I'm like, you know, his line mates do all the work. And he just sits there in the right circle as a left shot, waiting for that one time. And it's an elite one time. And he scores big goals. But I want to see more compete out of both of them. And so I wouldn't draft either of them in the top 10. And I kind of had to ding them a little bit in my next rank.
Sounds kind of like Ovi on the power play.
Well, yeah, but you know, but Ovi also is energetic and he hits and like he's
right.
That's all I want out of these kids. I want them to play hard off the puck, or just show that you care. And a lot of these kids, they can't do it. They're so used to being the top dog that they, I don't say they mail it in, but you watch Matt Beniers play. He doesn't know what the term mail it in means. He's goes full throttle, he'll play a 2.5 minute shift, full throttle from beginning to end. So, hey, yo, listen, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So I could rank kids on what I think is good and what I think is bad. But those are the kids that I think have a little bit more risk attached to them, and might see them slip out of that, let's say, like top 5 to 10 area that a lot of people have them ranked.
It kind of would have been interesting to see, you know, because obviously I believe Matty Beniers was committed to Harvard and then flipped last second to Michigan.
Yeah.
If he had gone to like the USHL or something like that, or any other league to play this season, you know, if he would still be ranked in the top three or what have you. Just kind of to wrap up the questions that we have, you know, it is such an odd year with so many people shifted in different leagues and stuff. Give us someone that is maybe going to be drafted in the second or third round that you think could end up being perhaps maybe the biggest steal in this draft.
There's a couple. There's a Finnish kid named Ville Koivunen, and I mean, he plays on that line. So Samu Tuomala was the main guy prospect wise out of Finland after Atu Ratu. Remember, we thought he was going to be the number one overall pick, and he kind of slipped a little bit. But after Ratu, it was more like, all right, well, who's the next best Finnish player? And a lot of people, including myself, felt that it was Tuomala. But it turns out that his line mate Koivunen, who's a left wing, he basically plays like a center, defensively responsible, outstanding stick handler and passer playmaker. Lethal on the power play, just the crossing passing that, I mean, Tuomala wants the puck to set up his one timer. You got to have a good playmaker to set him up. And that's exactly what Koivunen is, but he's also got good size and is responsible in his own end. The other kid I really like is the smaller defenseman on the Chicago Steel in the USHL. He's a Long Island kid, so I'm not biased because he's a New Yorker, but his name's Ryan Ufko, and he's going to UMass Amherst. And this kid is like he's like a Torrey Krug. He packs a punch. He hits hard. He's the same similar situation with Owen Power in Michigan, where all these talented forwards. Chicago Steel being like basically the Michigan of the USHL, where they have all these high level prospects playing for them. And you got to find a way to make all of them happy because they all want the puck. And he does a great job facilitating that. And he's got a hard shot. But again, the physicality, the momentum changing plays, the footwork in traffic. I think that he might even be a first round pick. I might be shortchanging him. But if he does get picked in the second or third round, you're looking at a big time steal, I think, at least.
And just staying with the Chicago Steel, just your very quick thoughts on, before we get to listener questions, very quick thoughts on Jack Barr.
He's mean, man. He's a mean, mean, aggressive, angry. He's just mean. He loves to hit everything. He'll hit anyone, anywhere. It doesn't matter what. He was paired with Ufko, you know, in the beginning of the season. And I guess for the Clark Cup final that's going on right now but with Fargo, they kind of split him up. And the thing about Barr, though, he's got puck skills. So he's a Canadian kid. He's playing in the USHL, but he can skate. He's got size. I think he's like 6'2", 195. He's got really good hands. He's a good his passing is okay, but, you know, always aggressive. He's always like dropping down below the circle or below the goal line, involved in plays activating. But the big thing with him is how tough and physical he is. Like he'll hit everything. So I like him a lot. I mean, that's where I think discipline comes into play, is that why are you going to drill a guy like in a developing 3-on-2? Why are you going to drill the puck carrier along the boards when that puck carrier sees it coming and just make that 3-on-2 become a more dangerous 2-on-1? And I noticed that Barr does that a lot. You know, he takes a lot of chances for the sake of physicality. And I think that's something that you could learn to tone down a bit at higher levels. So, but I mean, it looks good when he does it. I mean, it's nice to see a big hit in open ice.
So as Ryan just said, we do have some listener questions. You mind answering a few of them for us?
All right, let's shoot.
All right. So the first one is from Richard Straubia. And anybody who listens to this show knows I love telling everybody this. He goes by Dirty Harry on Twitter. It's just one of my favorite things, you know. So,
nice.
Anyways, he wants to know, what grade would you give the Kings organization based on the last three drafts since Blake took over? And should they focus on defense or offense in this coming draft? And also, as a third part to that question, should they trade or should they keep their first round pick or try to move up in the draft?
Well, they have arguably one of the top two prospect pools in the league. And the way that I rank farm systems is if a team drafts kids that I like, I'm going to give them a good grade. It's just that simple. And if those kids that I like that they drafted have really good post-draft seasons, then it's going to help their grade even more. So, I mean, I love what the Kings have done the last 3 years at the draft. I mean, they're playing their kids at the NHL level. I was the guy that – and this is not bragging. But, again, it ties into Richard's question is, like, I think the only guy that thought that Bjorn Fott was better than Broberg. And I said, Bjorn Fott is better. I'm telling you, he's more polished. He's going to be in the NHL quicker, and he's going to become a more impact player sooner. And so far, that's looking like a good prediction. So when the Kings take a guy like Bjorn Fott, not that they wouldn't have taken Broberg because he was already off the board, but the point stands that I really enjoy doing my post-draft write-ups when it comes to the Kings because they just draft plays. Simon Tyvel, love Simon Tyvel. You know, Kaliev. I mean, I could go down the list of all the guys. You know, Gabe Vilardi. I wanted the Rangers to get Gabe Vilardi, Kupari. you know, and then, of course, you got Byfield and Turcotte at the top. And even some of the other guys like Akil Thomas and Jared Anderson Dolan and, you know, Marcus Phillips, all the goalies. It's a well-balanced farm system. And it's got all types of things. It's got elite talent, elite scoring, physical defensemen, mobile defensemen, stand-up goalies, active goalies. I mean, it really – it's just a matter of time. The law of averages is going to work out for the Kings. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, you just mentioned Simon Tyvel, so we got one actually about him. It's from Stephen Ferricoli, and he wants to know, what's your take on Casper Simon Tyvel signing for 3 years with Kalpa in the Liga?
Well, I just want to answer the other two parts of Richard's questions first, real quick.
I'm sorry.
So, no, I don't think they should trade the pick because, remember, the Kings for years didn't have a lot of picks. And the last couple they have. And I just say, you know, you have 1 second. I think they have two-thirds, a fourth, fifth, and sixth. So I wouldn't trade. I would keep the pick and think about trading other prospects you might consider to be redundant or blocked and get some NHL help. But I would keep the pick, even in this kind of a draft. And the other question is which way I would lean towards. I would look for more finishers. I try to go get more, you know, Arthur Kaliev types. You got all these centers, all these playmakers. Why not complement each one in the farm system depth chart with a winger? So I would definitely go with a guy like an Eklund or a Kent Johnson, you know, or even maybe McTavish or a Sillinger. And so as far as Simon Tyler goes, you know, listen, I was surprised he went as late as he did. And you know, maybe they knocked his skating or maybe they knocked his size. He's kind of like a stocky build for a finesse winger. But you saw how he played at the World Juniors. He actually was pretty good this year in his first taste of SM League of Hockey. So he played against adults. I thought he held his own. He's definitely too good to be in junior hockey right now. And I just love how he's always around the net. You know, he's a finesse guy, but he's always around the net, fishing around for pucks, battling for net front positioning. And I think that's the type of plays that the Kings want. You know, have the hands to handle the puck in the tight areas, but also be willing to battle as well. And make it all the more difficult for the opposition in those key areas. So I'm pro Simon Tyler, always have been.
Very cool, very cool. And we have one last question, and it kind of wraps up everything we were just talking about. It's from Blake D from the IE, which, Russ, that means Inland Empire, correct?
You're right.
Just I'm in upstate New York, so I don't know. Anyways, do the Kings draft for need or take the best player available considering the odd nature of this year's draft? I think we've pretty much touched on that for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what best player available means, though. I mean, we all fall into this trap where best player available is supposed to mean the guy with the most stats or the most, like, you know, he's the flashiest. But I think it really depends on what the Kings view as their weaknesses. So if their weakness is, let's say, goaltending, then to them, the best player available is going to be, you know, Kosa or Wallstead. So I would go for need, you know, and there's nothing wrong with doing it at eighth overall, you know, because you have so much skill everywhere. You know, you're going to really create a logjam. If you keep, like, let's say the best player available is a center, you're going to draft another center now. So now what you run the risk of knocking down guys like Akil Thomas or Tyler Madden, you know, and so if they don't switch to wing, you might have to move them. They become unhappy with your organization. I like drafting, you know, for positional need in a situation like this, especially when you have the second best prospect pool in the league, or first, whichever way you want to look at it.
And Steve, I just want to thank you for coming on the podcast and doing this with us. But just my last question for you is, you just kind of just touched on it. Kent Johnson, if the Kings were to take him, let's say, eighth with the eighth pick, do you see him staying a center, or do you see him transitioning to the wing in the NHL?
He could play either. I mean, he's a natural goal scorer, but he's also a natural playmaker as well. So it really doesn't matter. He played center most of the season when he was in the BCHL. And then this year, he and Beniers were on the fourth line, with Beniers the center and Johnson the wing. And within a matter of like two games, they were already like top six guys. he has the slap shot. He loves to use the slap shot. I think that's it's a lost art in the world of hockey. I think he could fit either way, but within the context of what the Kings have in their organization, then he might answer that question, that natural goal scoring wing that could complement an Alex Turcotte or a Quentin Byfield. So yeah, I'm pro Johnson. He's going to move up all the way to number four in my final ranking. There's so many things that the critiques that he get, I don't think are warranted, because he's also pretty good off the puck as well. And I just want to say one thing, and I think I talked about it in a podcast and even wrote about it in the write-up, where the Michigan, there was one play where they were executing a weave. And so he was curling towards the point, right? I guess towards the right point is a left shot. And he wanted the defenseman to switch. So that means that he's going high. He wants the defenseman to switch and go low. But the defenseman wasn't having it, and either he didn't understand what was expected of him, or he was just tired and wanted to stay there. And Johnson was doing this. He was doing this while he's carrying the puck. He's getting that. I've never seen that in my life in the sport of hockey, and that is high-level intelligence right there. And they scored a goal later in that shift that had nothing to do with the defenseman, but yeah, I love the kid. I think he's a great prospect. He's a lot of fun to watch. And oh, by the way, he scores these Michigan goals and dipsy doodles, and you know, so he's all that clear about him as well.
And if it helps, I mean, Ross has been banging the drum on him since we started, so that's
yeah, I'm a big Cam Johnson fan. Yeah, just because of those Michigan goals and those, all this fun stuff that he does.
Yeah, he's a fun player. Yeah, I mean, you want to when you go to the game, you're paying $75-$80 a pop and you know $15 for beer or whatever. Like, you want to be entertained. And right. You know, the Kings won cups by playing a real physical, intimidating style, and they had a lot of skill too. But you know, maybe I'm old school. I remember Gretzky and Nichols and Robitaille, and before Gretzky, Jimmy Carson. Like, you know, a lot of fun to watch. And so I like the high flying days of the old Kings, and would be nice to see it again.
Yes, it would. It'd be nice to see it all over the league, too. I think it's
I think it's coming. I think it is.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, thank you for coming on. Before we let you go, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the Draft Analyst site and the YouTube channel you have, and where we can find you on social media?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at the Draft Analyst. The YouTube channel is called Prospect Film Room. It's basically just highlight packages for the top prospects. And I actually just learned how to put the highlight, the player, so you know that it's him in the highlight. And then you're going to find just basically all the top kids. I usually do about 50 to 75 a year. So most of the top kids that get picked, you'll find highlight packages, brief ones too, like 5 to 6 minutes. The draft blog's located at thedraftanalyst.com. Draft profiles, mock drafts, rankings, recaps of all types of tournaments, prospect events. Every league gets covered. You know, there's even NHL stuff on there. We cover NHL prospects and the Stanley Cup playoffs. I got an article coming out in a couple of days about the postseason. So, and it's a free blog. So, you know, you don't have to pay anything. And I don't think I have any more ads on there anymore. Those are annoying me. So I got rid of them.
Yeah, and just a quick plug for you, Steve. I mean, your latest article, I believe, was about Simone Edvidson today. So everyone, please go check that out.
Yep. And Svechkov comes out tomorrow. Okay. On the ready to get, you might see him top five, by the way. Good play. Good center.
Beautiful. One last question. Who's taking the cup?
I want to say Colorado. The reason why I'm saying Colorado is they had two painful game seven losses. One where they were the young upstart team, and then the other one as the favorite. And I think that really bugged them. And even though they have their defense is a little young, I think that they're going to hit their stride. Not even now. They're going to hit it in like the second or like conference finals, second round of the conference finals. And I think this is their year. But out of the East, I think Carolina is going to surprise some people because they similar situation to Colorado, where they've had some pretty difficult defeats to stomach over the offseason. I think they're so physical and mean and skilled. I mean, I just want to see the Leafs play. I want to see the finesse Leafs play one of these teams. I just want to see what happens and see if I'm wrong. Like if we're all wrong that you came with a cup with just not back checking and not hitting. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. So Steve, we had Chris Peters on from Hockey Sense last week. And he actually predicted Colorado Hurricanes finals. So you guys have obviously been comparing notes before you come on the podcast.
No, I mean, he's a smart guy, and I like Chris a lot. I like the work that he does. He was great doing color at the U18 Worlds. The hunter has always become the hunted. So I think this year it's going to be tough for Tampa to do it. I just think that the East is going to be so tough. That gauntlet that you got to roll through. Whereas I think the team that comes out of the West is going to be like, oh, I get to play the Maple Leafs or the Jets. Yeah. You know, no offense to them, but you know, it wasn't a good division this year. So,
the Leafs got to make it out of the first round, though. So that's
The Canadians are so bad, though. My goodness, they the thing is, I'm going to go over on a tangent just for a second. They kept everything secretive. Like gamesmanship, I get it, but they got Carey Price playing in the minors.
Yeah.
Like Shea Weber, like he was skating, but they're not saying if he's going to play or not. They have problems, but you never know. Listen, Carey Price stole the series against Pittsburgh last year, so no reason why he can't do it again. But we'll see.
It's James Bond hockey up there in Montreal. So, all right. Well, Steve, we'll let you go. We really appreciate you coming on, and you're welcome to come back and talk to us at any time.
Anytime, guys. Anytime. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Right. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Steve Coriano.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was Steve Corianos of thedraftanalyst.com. You know, I got to tell you, now I'm starting to get excited for the draft. And it's incredible. He's right. The draft boards are all over the place, which to be expected. I mean, you know, we really can't – it's hard to judge any kid's talent this year because of all the shortened seasons and the no seasons and all that, you know?
It's making them – go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, so I was going to say real quick, it's going to be interesting to see how the chips end up falling because, you know that all these guys that were going to end up in the top five of his draft board, you know, you could have one of these players that we were talking about here slip all the way to, you know, in the 15s or 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could see some down the bottom now all of a sudden the top five, like he's mentioned. I mean, we've only really seen players, or most people have only really seen players play at the World Juniors, so now it'll be interesting to see if the top 10 mixes up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So switching gears from the draft, Russell, I know there is something that you want to talk about. So lead us off.
I'm going to sign off, guys. No, I'm just kidding. So,
we all know what the big news has been these last few weeks. It's been all around that Buffalo Sabres forward, Jack Eichel. I have a few thoughts on this, and I've been kind of holding it in and ready to release it here.
Okay.
Trading for a player.
Relieve yourself, Russell.
Yes. I'm ready. It's coming. Trading for a player like Jack Eichel is the reason why the Kings have been stockpiling these picks and prospects. Jack Eichel is a top 10 center in the NHL, and he's only 24 years old. Of course, he signed to a big deal, $10 million for, five more years. And I get it that he's had some neck history. There's a little bit of a neck question mark going right there. But we're talking about a legit superstar in the NHL. And the up-and-coming kind of – he'll pass the torch pretty much from Kopitar to Eichel. So I know a lot of people were kind of questioning, like, okay, well, if we're trading Jack Eichel, we'd have to probably trade a Quentin Byfield. I'm not necessarily on board with that, and I'm pretty sure – I kind of feel like the Kings could get Eichel without trading away Byfield. I mean, with all those question marks I just mentioned, they can probably, with the amount of prospects the Kings have, they can put together a package that doesn't include Byfield, Vilardi, Kupari, Fagamo. There's a bunch of prospects that can be included. And I mean, if I were to make that trade, which I think the Kings should, I wouldn't include Quentin Byfield. I wouldn't include Arthur Kaliev, and I wouldn't include Alex Turcotte. I would just try to do my best to try to get a package together without those players. If a Turcotte is included or if a Kaliev is included, maybe I would kind of see what that package would look like. But Quentin Byfield is off limits for me. I agree with everybody that says that. But getting Jack Eichel wouldn't be a bad thing for LA. And I think it's something that they should really pursue. And it sounds like it's something that Rob Blake has.
Yeah, Frank Cervelli from TSN was just saying that's Byfield's a non-starter. And that's coming from some pretty good sources, according to him. You know, and really, it wouldn't break my heart if they included the first round pick.
No, not at all. And I think, if they include this year's first round pick, like we just mentioned with Steve, there's so much up and down with this draft that, there's no real generational talent that's kind of just like sticking out right now. So, you can make it top three protected or whatever. I think if they are to include a first-round pick, they'd probably have to look at next year's first-round pick. They have two second-round picks this year. They can include a second-rounder in that package. So, we're talking about the Kings have so many prospects. I've heard from people on Twitter that, we're going to sell the farm just to get one player. No, we can sell three or four high-end prospects and still have three or four more left. This is why we've been stockpiling these many prospects. So give LA has to make a deal like this. And it seems like it's either going to be Jack Eichel it could be Jack Eichel or a solid left wing dynamic or left wing forward or a dynamic left defense. So I don't know. There's a lot of question marks, but it's either Jack Eichel or that left wing forward and that left defenseman really for LA. And that seems to be the strategy that Rob Blake will be going. But also, I will say that if the Kings do get Jack Eichel, there's still room to get another piece. They're not going to be cap strapped all of a sudden. I think they're going into next year with close to 20 mil in cap space. So you're still talking about close to 10 mil. You can sign a depth forward. You can sign that left shot defenseman and possibly get another star coming into LA. But like we heard from Rob Blake today, during the exit interviews, the roster has to be changed, and there's some players that are probably going to have to be coming in.
Yeah, and that's – and, you know, the thing is how many left – or dynamic left defensemen are available, really available? Mm-hmm. You know
and
what
that's
I mean?
A big, yeah,
but, I mean,
a big
just to wrap up – exactly. But just to wrap up with Eichel, the rumor mill has it that Arizona is suddenly heavily involved. I don't know how they're going to pull that off because they have, like, four draft picks, I think. And, you know, and I, obviously the prospect pool isn't as deep as the Kings, but we'll see how that turns out. But
just real quick, I don't see how Arizona gets in on that. I mean, I just they don't have nearly the prospect pool or the picks to make that work. I mean,
right?
They'd have to give up like half their NHL roster
or Chikrin.
The one.
yeah.
Well, he's coming to LA, so it's okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, right.
Another thing I will say on Eichel is that I've heard some people kind of questioning his leadership abilities. I mean, he was just nominated for the King Clancy Award, so that kind of should put a lot of that to bed. So just kind of throwing that out there as well.
And he won't be so dependent on to be the leader in LA.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got Doughty. You got Brownie. You know,
Buffalo's a big market for hockey. So there's probably a lot of attention. I mean, right next to Toronto. You come to LA. I mean, I just read something from Tyler Toffoli where he was talking about how he'd go down the street. People wouldn't even know who he was. I mean, LA is a big, big hockey community, but I mean, it's a big area too. So there's a lot of superstars in LA. You have LeBron out here. Jack Eichel could be a superstar and not have that pressure on him as well.
Right. Well, exactly.
No offense, but we all saw what Taylor Hall did as soon as he got out of Buffalo. No offense to Sabres fans that might be tuning into this, but you know, it is what it is.
It was the same thing Jeff Carter did when he got to Pittsburgh. So, you know, I mean, it's, in all fairness, right? In all fairness.
No, I know.
But shifting gears, and speaking of the Bruins, Ryan, you wrote an interesting piece a day or two ago about a certain trade that could
happen. Yeah, so I was just kind of perusing just kind of the rumors and stuff like that. And I saw something interesting on the Boston Globe. The Bruins are looking for more they have centerman prospects that are real close to being NHL ready. And the trade they proposed was Jake DeBrusk for Tyler Madden, straight up, just a straight up trade, no other draft picks involved. Jake DeBrusk had the first goals for the Bruins in games 1 and 2 of the playoffs so far this postseason. Didn't have the best regular season. I think he had, 5 goals, 9 points, something like that. Numbers are all starting to blend together in my head. But he's 2 years removed from 27 goals, and he had another look in game two. I forgot who passed it to him at the right dot, but he had an excellent look, a one-timer on net. He's got that good finishing ability. I think that would be valuable to the Kings.
Yeah, he looks a lot bigger on ice than how I remember Jake Bruss. But, I mean, when you sent me over that trade, I was like, oh, I can see Madden as being a piece. The Kings would probably have to include a little bit more. I mean, DeBrusk is a scoring forward. I mean, he's a scoring winger. I mean, we're not just going to be able to give up Tyler Madden. I know Tyler Madden's got good potential, but probably have to include a little bit more. But like I mentioned, I mean, the Kings have the pieces to make these type of trades, and Rob Blake, it seems like he's ready to pull the trigger on that type of move.
Well, it's interesting on Jake DeBrusk because he was a healthy scratch a number of times this season. He had like a career worst, less than 6% shot rate. Obviously, career low average time on ice. He's fallen out of favor with the coaching staff for reasons that I don't quite know. Maybe it's just the numbers, just not scoring or what have you. Maybe there's more to it. But yeah, I mean, maybe a change of scenery is best for both parties at this point. I think it could be a good fit here in LA.
And the irony is they could have actually drafted him if they didn't trade for Milan Lucic. But
let's not talk about that.
You know, it's, I know, right? I know. Just think if they still had that first round pick. Anyways, you know, that's the thing about Tyler Madden, you know, very exciting player, but you almost got the impression, at least from my standpoint, when they traded for him in that Tyler Toffoli trade, it almost felt like they were trading for future trade bait. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, even then, they were still so loaded at center. And then especially once Quentin Byfield comes along, it's like, okay, what's going to happen here? Somebody's got to move, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's really too bad that he broke his collarbone playing for the Rain this year, because he really didn't get all that much of a chance to showcase what he had. But I think that's somebody that could actually be moved to add.
Yeah, and he also broke his finger, too, in the very first game over in Germany with Eisbären Berlin. Mm-hmm. You know, he's part of the five prospects that went over together, and he's immediately sent back. So I think he was limited to 14 games this year. But, yeah, I mean, you said it too, Scott. I just once they drafted Byfield, I was like, I don't know where he plays unless he converts to the wing. Even then, you know, there's not a whole lot of room on the current roster.
Yeah, it seems like the Kings down the middle are pretty much set going into next season. I mean, it's going to be Kopitar, Byfield, Vlardy. And then if they make the Eichel trade, Vlardy probably have to be included, or maybe let's say they do include Byfield, then you have Kopitar, Eichel, a mix of Vlardy or Byfield. I mean, having that, I'll go back to Eichel again. I mean, you can have those three down the middle with Kopitar. That's a playoff caliber roster. And with the amount of prospects that can come up, I've been finagling a little bit on cap friendly and come up with some pretty exciting lineups. So we'll see what happens.
You know, it's always interesting when you say in the group chat, I got bored last night.
I spent a lot of time on cap friendly, just kind of like messing around with that armchair GM. That's kind of what my night entails before I finally decide to doze off to sleep.
Well, you're dedicated, Russ. That's all there is to it.
Russ actually just he takes a screenshot and sends it to Rob Blake. He's like, look, this is what you gotta do.
Yeah. Try to make this trade.
Look, it worked.
Look, they said it was okay.
So let's wrap up with exit interviews that are taking place. And one that really kind of struck me was Drew Doughty, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not, right? He is pretty much sick of losing and wants to see the Kings improve the roster, which is what we have been talking about. What were some of the takeaways you guys had from all the exit interviews that are going on?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Doughty stuck out. Obviously, it seems like he definitely – I mean, he's been around this team for a while now. So he's been through the – obviously, he's been through the ups, and now he's going through the downs. And he's seen this roster firsthand. I mean, he's played with multiple pairs of defensemen, and it finally seems like he's got a good partnership going on with Mikey Anderson. And that was probably one of the few great takeaways to have if you're a Kings fan, is that revitalized season that Drew Doughty was having. So – you were kind of having a lot of question marks for his play the last few years, but now this season is a good step forward for him. And I hope, I think him and Mikey will have a good pairing in the future, but with Rob Blake today and Todd McClellan today, and I know Rob mentioned that roster change is probably coming up in the off season. And we've all been aware of that for the whole year now, that changes are going to have to be made. And Todd McClellan mentioned that there's some disappointments, obviously, throughout the year. He noted the forecheck was really disappointing. So I think we all saw that firsthand. So mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see. One statement that kind of stood out to me is that he mentioned that with the new talent that's coming up, that they might have to look at different systems. I thought that was really interesting, because if I was actually, I don't know if I talked to Jim Fox about this, but he said that he might see the Kings changing away from the 1-3-1 system if they get better talent in, which I'm not a big fan. I've mentioned this multiple times. I'm not the biggest fan of the 1-3-1. I think it takes away of a lot of excitement from the game. You just get a lot of dump ins and you're just hoping for clean breakouts. I mean, that's what the Kings had this year. And you just never saw that clean first pass from the defenseman to the forward throughout the whole year. And I think if you get more skilled players, you can go to a more heavy forecheck cutting game.
Jeez, Russell, Jim Fox mentioned you one time on the broadcast. Now you guys are best buds.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're hanging out tomorrow.
Yeah. But no, just to touch on the Doughty thing, I mean, obviously it's a positive that he has a pairing partner going into the offseason, which cannot be said for the past two. Obviously, Ben Hutton last offseason was a free agent, didn't return, was a late addition to the Ducks at the start of the regular season.
He could be playing games for the Leafs in the playoffs.
I know. Yeah, it was obviously he was traded then too. But Doughty is so outspoken, and Rob Blake responded to him today. So it was so nice to see that. And ultimately, we have to wait to see what the summer brings. July 28th is when the free agency period officially opens. But you can't field the same roster next year.
Yeah. Yeah. We can talk about trades and players that they're looking at, but I think the expansion draft is a big question mark for all teams this summer, and maybe we'll see some big moves just from that. And the Kings have a lot of cap space, so let's see if they take advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And one last interesting little nugget that I took from those the Kings interviews: McClellan's today, Coach McClellan. He was asked right off the bat if he thinks he's going to be back next year.
Yeah, that was an interesting question.
The pressure might be on next season.
Sounds like it.
So, geez.
The entire coaching staff's going to be back next year. It's like, holy Lord, we're in for a ride here, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, the expectation meter just went and broke. So that's Well, guys, I'll tell you what. We got about almost 10 minutes now until the Ontario Reign play their first playoff game. So I think we're going to wrap this one up so we can watch that. Mm-hmm. But once again, we want to thank Steve Corianos from the Draft Analyst for coming on. It was a great interview. And until next time, guys. Ryan, who we got coming up on our next show?
Yeah, next Tuesday. Seems like we record a lot on Tuesdays. Just works out with a lot of us. But actually, got Colin Fraser coming on. So a lot of you listeners should know who that is. So it'll be on next Tuesday.
Very cool. Very, very cool. All right. So we're looking forward to that. But in the meantime, for Ryan Sykes, for Russell Morgan, I'm Scott Kimball. Thanks for listening. And no, not Go Kings Go this time. It's Go Reign Go.
There you go.
See you next time.